This is the Home Tech Podcast Show, number 41, recorded on August 25th, 2011. I am your host, Jim Collison, broadcasting live and live on the live stream. Say that. That sounds weird every time I say that, but we are here at the Average Guy Studios in Bellevue, Nebraska. Each week, we post this show out to theaverageguy.tv. You can contact the show, podcast at theaverageguy.tv. Follow me on Twitter. That's just at Jay Collison. I picked up a few followers. Thank you, Byte.com. Or you can find us on Facebook by searching The Average Guy Podcast. All right, with me tonight and a few, well, you guys are all regulars. So I'm from Melbourne, Australia, and our international correspondent. I said that twice, Andrew. Andrew, how are you doing?
Good, Jim. Yeah, good. Nice day down here. As we were just saying, it's a balmy 44 Fahrenheit.
I don't think we've ever caught you on a bad day, to be honest. Is Melbourne always got that great weather going on?
No, I'm just a happy guy.
Okay, well, that's... you got a good backdrop going there, too, with the books, and you look very studious.
Yeah, he looks like a professor.
I don't know about that.
Absolutely.
Geek.
Well,
they're all textbooks.
That who just piped in is a home server show co-host of mine, John Zadler. John, how are you doing this evening?
Hey, Jim. Doing good.
Good to have
weather
you.
Weather is decent. Since we're on the weather topic.
Yeah, go ahead.
A little bit of rain. They say on the weekend we might get some of that, a little bit of rain left over from the hurricane, but obviously nothing compared to what some of the places is going through over there in the States. As a matter of fact, I saw earlier this afternoon the International Space Station, right? It flew over the eye of the storm, and they were showing pictures on the website there. So that was excellent. You could see the storm from their point of view. Imagine that.
That hasn't hit shore yet, has it?
Still, I don't know where
still
it
in
is.
The water. I don't know. We have to take a peek.
The space station?
No.
that'll stay up.
Yeah, let's hope so. Well, also there in the background is one and the founder and host of Rich's Random Podcast Generator, Rich O'Neill. Rich, how are you doing?
Very good, Jim. How are you doing tonight?
I'm doing great. Good to have you out this evening, and thanks for answering the call on short notice to come and join the podcast. I appreciate it.
Well, I'm shoring up for the hurricane that's coming up here. So
I don't know.
You know, I'm not a big weather guy. I have no idea what's going on up here. But I hear from people who are fretting and worrying over it that, you know, we're probably going to get some big winds up toward the end of the weekend. So we'll see. We'll see. Hopefully not.
Sure. Yeah. Well, hopefully it'll come ashore and really die down, and it'll just be a rain tropical storm event for the East Coast. That's a lot of people live there. And so if you're on the East Coast, you know, Bill Pullman was scheduled to be on the show tonight. He is in the path of the storm. And I guess they've been getting a lot of rain in his area. And so he was like, they're expecting 15 inches more of rain this weekend.
Wow.
And so he was battening down the hatches and
get your sandbags ready.
Yeah. So speaking of sandbags, we've had some in the Omaha area here. We've had some storms of our own over the last week. And on Thursday, the downtown area flooded with about two feet of water. Well, is it maybe that much? Maybe a foot, foot and a half. As it rained, it all came downtown. And we, this summer, because the Missouri flooded, we've installed these big pipes that go up from the downtown area up and over the levee and down, and we call it the poop chute. So when the sewers fill up, they crank on the generators, pump the water out over the levee into the Missouri, right? It's the poop chute, because here in downtown area, they don't separate the storm sewers and the the other sewers.
Uh-huh, right? Uh-huh. Okay, that just gets better and better, doesn't it?
It's a good story. So it's an old part of town. I mean, it's an old part of town. And so rain on Sunday night about 3:30, I was woken up to ping, ping, and then what sounded like someone was taking a sledgehammer and pounding it on my roof, and we were getting baseball-size hail in our location.
Oh, that's right. You're telling me about that. Yeah.
We had left our cars outside. I never leave my car out of the garage, and I had left it in the driveway, and so I went running downstairs, I grabbed my keys, which I couldn't find right away, which made me even madder. So grabbed my keys, ran out, opened the garage door, and as I was opening it out, a piece of hail came off my windshield and came right at me. I mean, a chunk this big, and hit me in the leg. I said, I'm not going outside. Closed the garage door. Those cars, they're just cars. But both of them just got pummeled. No broken windows, but we've got enough dents in them. So the weather has been kind of crazy. That same rainstorm then flooded the downtown downtown Omaha with about a foot of water. And because the engineers that designed this poop chute, as we call it, didn't put the generators up high enough. So in the downtown flood, okay, you're building a pump to pump water out of a flooded area, and you put the generators down at the water level, right? So
naturally.
Yeah, because if you're an engineer, that's what you'd do, right? Wouldn't you jack that thing up on some stilts and make sure it's higher than you think the water's going to be? Anyways, the water flooded the generators and shut off the pumps, and so the whole downtown area flooded. And they came in, cleared out the generators, and then had the downtown cleared by about 6 hours later. But it left a nice thick layer, about an inch of mud, just about everywhere. I was like, what, man,
you think it was?
No, okay, anyway. Yeah, it wasn't really mud, but.
Oh, yeah.
How does that smell around your place?
Man, where's that come from? It has been the reality this summer here in the Midwest. We have just had more water than we know how to handle. The Missouri is still at 33 feet, which is 4 feet above flood stage, and it's showing no signs of going down. I think we're going to have a frozen, flooded river this year. They did. I know this is not the the disaster podcast, but they did show some stories of some of the areas where the water has receded. We've dropped about 2 feet, and so some of the lower lands, and it looks like the Badlands or a desert landscape. The topsoil is completely gone, and it's cut crevices out of the farmland. I mean, you'd have to have a mountain, you know, a dirt bike to ride in some of these areas, and so the farmers are going to have to. It's going to be millions, maybe billions. The freeways are gone. They've broken up and kind of washed away. And so it's going to probably be a year or two before we're back to normal. So if you're here in the Midwest, we've got an expensive recovery. This has probably been the slowest moving disaster in U.S. history. I mean, it started back in April and has just gone every day. Nothing spectacular, but it just kind of has destroyed everything in its path. So, anyways, guys, welcome to the show. Sorry to start on such a sour note, but we got some tech news to talk about. I'll remind folks, if they want to get information to us, they got ideas about the show, send us an email, podcast@theaverageguy.tv. We've been getting a lot of traction this week. Speaking of that, I published an article on Byte this week at Byte.com, which got a lot of traction around the web OS. And of course, the HP touchpad went on sale. Well, when we podcasted last Thursday, of course, HP had already just made that decision, and we were kind of right there to talk about it that evening. I don't think anybody saw the fire sale that was coming on Saturday. I started getting some tweets on Saturday morning or early Saturday morning. Chris Lux sent me some email saying, "Hey, touchpad's $99," and it kicked off kind of a frenzy that we've all been talking about over the last week. Andrew, I know that you have been trying to get a hold of some touchpads down there in Australia without much luck.
Yeah, we got an email, I think it was Tuesday, internally, that said that from the personal systems group, saying that the touchpad was pretty much going on fire sale internally as well as to public. I think that went on fire sale out here on Tuesday to public, so... the local retailer, we had an exclusive retailer out here, and most of the clients that they had on Tuesday lunchtime were HP staff going in and picking up a unit. So I ordered two, and then I ordered another two internally, and that was on Tuesday afternoon. I'm still waiting to even get confirmation if they've processed the order yet. Okay. So that... I waited on hold to our internal call line for about an hour, 50 minutes, before I finally got through to an operator. Wow. And then.
But I was on company time, right?
I don't know. Yeah. And then I handed. I've got a wireless headset at work, so I handed the headset to 15 other people who then put orders in as well.
There you go.
Wait, one more, another one. Yeah, one more, one more.
Yeah. So this poor little girl in Chennai or Mumbai or wherever she was, yeah, sales figures just went through the roof in the space of about 25 minutes.
Yeah.
That took us all by surprise. I think. Everyone who's got one thinks it's a good thing, but we sort of can't work out why they did what they did and axed it so quickly.
Yeah, it was a very fast decision to do that. It's left me a little bitter. I mean, I've been a kind of a WebOS fan over the last couple of years and have really liked it as an OS. Although somebody said to me, and I think it was Chris Lux, we were talking last week, Chris said, Jim, why do you like that so much? How can you keep defending it? And I think maybe I'm a sucker for the underdog. Yeah. You know?
The little engine. What's that little engine song there?
Yeah, the little engine that could.
There's
yeah.
Jim.
Yeah.
It could just do it.
Well, you know, and I've been...
I
have been reviewing it. I got the review unit at just absolutely the right time. I mean, I can't believe the luck I had. People were scrambling to try and get a hold of those, and I already had one in my hand. And if you go to theaverageguy.tv, I posted, I started what I call the 28-day experiment, which was could I use this for 28 days and replace my laptop with it? And I think yes and no. There's some things it can do and some things it can't do. I kind of switched over a little bit and wrote an article that I posted on Tuesday, I think, that is 10 things you can do with your touchpad right now, or maybe that was last night. All the days are starting to blend together. 10 things that you can, if you bought one of these touchpads for $99, some of these guys, I'll be honest, I've been getting some emails, especially since the Byte article went out, of saying, okay, I've got this touchpad, now what do I do with it? I mean,
yeah,
there was such a frenzy around buying these things. People were buying them, and they didn't even know what they were. You know, it's like, okay, so what
Element's a picture frame.
Yeah, it's somebody said that to me this week. They said, "Well, shoot, was that you? I'll just send it."
It's the cheapest digital photo frame you could buy on the market, 9 inches at the moment.
Yeah. Well, it would work.
Wi-Fi built in, right?
Mm-hmm. Yep.
Mm-hmm. Sharp
UPnP
little
streaming.
Yeah. Very, very sharp. I mean, I think for most people, for the average guy, I think the touchpad is the perfect device for the average guy. It does everything. I mean, I wrote these 10 things. It connects to corporate and pop email. You can do maps on it. You can play games on it. You can edit documents on it. You can watch the web on it. You get YouTube. You get Facebook. And I've heard a lot of people complain about the apps, but... you can do Skype on it. Rich, you and I have had some conversations via Skype that work really well. It's got these dynamite stereo speakers that play just incredible sound. My wife brought up YouTube and played it and was like, this is great. I had to pry it out of her hands when we were done. So I think, you know, I think it's the perfect average guy device. And for most people, everything they do is going to be included in that list of 10 things that I put in there. And not too much more.
Actually, one question I do have for you, Jim, and it's around the performance of it. Have you put the performance tweak into it through the dialer?
No, and I need to. In fact, I've got a couple articles coming up on that. I've been working with a guy I just met in, of all places, the Home Server Show forums, who has overclocked or installed the pre-wear software on it that allows you to kind of speed up the processor. Yeah. So I've got a post ready to talk about his experience with it and then some instructions on how to do it. It's not new. That's been around. I mean, that tweak was available for the Palm Pre, the first version of the phone, and I used that when it came out.
So what does that do to the heat? What does that do to the battery life?
What you would expect.
Yeah.
Okay.
Yeah.
All right.
Go ahead, Andrew.
I was going to say the one I was referring to, Rich, is it turns the logging down because it's a Unix kernel underlying it.
Okay.
By default, it logs everything. So the hack that most of the guys at work have been doing, you don't have to install pre-wear on it or anything like that. You just go into the dialer within Skype, put in a hash code, and it brings you into the logging configurator, and you basically just turn down logging.
Oh.
And it frees up resources, give a little speed bump.
It's a significant difference. Like Angry Birds goes from being smooth to being fast.
Wow. Well, Andrew, after the show, you'll have to walk me through that a little bit. We'll have to see if we can make that happen. It's not as slow, I think, as people make it out to be. There are moments where it's a little clunky. You know, it just stutters a little bit and does some things. And so if this improvement would fix it without even having to overclock it or use the pre-wear, that sounds like a pretty good post. I hear more posts in my future. I really never intended to do this, to get this far with it, but there's so much interest around it it's been kind of crazy. But for $99, it is a no-brainer if you can get your hands on it. John or Rich, have either one of you thought about getting out and trying to pick one up?
I'll try and get my hands on one, yeah.
Okay.
Yeah, I told my neighbor that works for a company called Future Shop, which is like here in Canada, it's like Best Buy. So I'm kind of thinking the only way I get my hands on one is through some kind of connection like that. So I says, if any come across in the store, you know, put one aside for me for $100. Like we said before, you know, even if you just use it as a picture frame, digital wireless Wi-Fi picture frame, that's, you know, your money is well spent.
Yeah. Rich?
Well, I told you no before, but I think for $99, it might be fun to play with.
Yeah.
Especially with the hack, you know, the little logging hack to cut that. I'll bet it'd be a lot of fun to pick up. I mean, $99 for
You can't.
What, how big is the screen on this thing?
It's a no-brainer. Those are
9.1 inch.
Yeah. Yeah, it's a good size. It's
Yeah, you know, iPad, because, I mean, that would kick. I was thinking actually about getting a Kindle so I could, you know, store PDFs on it.
Yeah.
And I could get this thing and read PDFs and then a heck of a lot more.
Yeah,
but you know something? I don't hold out much hope that I'm going to find any place that actually has one of these. Now, do you think there's going to be?
No.
Well, thanks for the encouragement.
I'm just saying.
You want some music on that one, Jim?
Just saying. Let's see if I can get that. Yeah, there's so Rich. There's the size of it. You get a pretty good. No, Rich, I don't think you guys like you and me won't find that anywhere retail. They'll get snatched up. You know, you can, you know, Greg in chat says eBay for $300. Yeah, it's going to create, it may even create this wild like aftermarket where they actually cost more to buy later than maybe to buy them new. I don't know.
I think that's kind of disappointing too. I mean, without wanting to rain on people's parade who are making the best of a situation, but you know, we're seeing out here that there are people selling, you know, 5, 6, 7 of them, and you know, to me that sort of leaves a bad taste in your mouth. If people want to do something like that, then you're sort of taking it away from other people having that opportunity.
Yeah, no need to hoard them. Just get the one that you need and move on. And so it's a great situation. So if you're listening to the podcast and you get a chance to come across one, send me an email. Podcast. No, I'm just kidding. Pick it up. It's a great tablet to have. It does a lot of things. If you want to know exactly what it can do, again, pop out to theaverageguy.tv. I've got to post, you know, 10 things you can do right off the bat. And by the way, those 10 things, you HP could never do another thing again. And they would still work on your touchpad. Andrew, you brought up a point to me the other day. The big drawback, of course, comes in the form of support if that thing breaks 4 or 5 months, you know, down the road.
Yeah, well, we in the press out here, they're saying that that they are going to be offering the full 12-month warranty. So I think the 12-month warranty will really entail if it breaks, you'll get your money back.
Well, $100. I mean, come on,
otherwise, if they had them in stock, they'd be selling them. You'd have to think,
right?
That's just, you know, that's me being, you know, the cynic in the retail industry.
Hey, you know, heck with this. What about the PCs that you guys won't be selling anymore? What's up with that?
Yeah. Yeah. What is up with that, Andrew?
That is crazy.
Don't comment.
Somebody
Get me when I've got a glass of water halfway down my throat, Rich. Yeah, look, That's another one. I guess that one hasn't been officialized yet out of the HP stable. I mean,
that's completely in the same
announcement. Yeah, the same announcement within the WebOS announcement, you know, that they're looking at getting rid of the personal systems group altogether. So nothing's come out internally, but what I've been reading in the press is that it's a low-margin business and there's not a lot of strategy in keeping something that's low-margin. And, you know, the new CEO, who's Leo Apotheker, who's sort of come out of the SAP type area out of Europe, is very much going down the path of, you know, server as a service type functionality. You know, we've just bought Autonomy, who I've got no idea what they do, but it sounds awesome. But
they're a web search, right?
Yeah, I think they're a data mining type company. I'm not entirely sure.
Okay.
I read that HP sells one out of every five computers sold, and they're saying that that's not enough for them.
Well, they were the number one in the world, but the margins are too low, is what Andrew's saying.
Right. That's what the press has been saying. You know, all we've seen is that it's been deemed that it's not strategic. Mm-hmm. So,
the next IBM, I think.
Yeah, so there's a bit of rumor going around that it's probably ripe for the picking for someone like Samsung.
Yeah,
because Samsung have got the rest of the mobile world covered, and you know, would it make sense to get into desktop laptop for them? Yeah, probably. They're one of the most cashed up businesses in that type of area.
Imagine if these guys, that's it, they sell all these tablets for $99, and then Samsung buys the WebOS. And starts coming up with some apps.
That'd fix their problem with Apple as well, wouldn't it?
Well, it'd fix their problem with Android. And not that they have a problem with them, but I mean, they right now they're kind of dependent on Android, and they make great phone hardware. I mean, this is the thing. Yeah. I've got their Epic, and if it weren't for the Android OS, it'd be a great phone. And I mean, it's slick. It looks good. It is. It's a ripoff of the iPhone. But I mean, it allegedly. So, but I could. Wow. I could imagine the WebOS on a Samsung device. That'd look pretty good.
Yeah.
And they have the footprint to compete. John, go ahead.
But do you think that the WebOS is, I don't know, for lack of a better word, a mature enough software that? You know.
Before you answer that, but what the heck is WebOS? I mean, I've heard of it. I've never used it. I've never experienced it. Tell me some major characteristics about WebOS.
Well, let's go back. Let's go back a little bit in time, Rich. So, of course, you know, when Palm had dominated the PDA market and began to put their software on Centrinos, the Palm phone devices, right? They began to realize that the Palm OS was not going to be one that could move forward from a smartphone perspective. And they were out ahead of the curve. I think they saw this, that they weren't equipped to really be leaders in the future. I think they saw the iPhone coming and said, hey, we got to make some changes. And so they, from the ground up, rewrote this OS, which is a Linux derivative of some kind, I would imagine, and kind of thought, if we were going to start from scratch, what would we do? And so they they built this, I think, very efficient, very well laid out, multitasking mobile OS that would be one that could compete not only today but well into the future. It had all the momentum at CES 2008 when it first came out, or maybe 2007 even. I'd have to go back and check whether it was 2007 or 2008. It came out. It had an incredible amount of momentum, and then it took them 9 or 12 or forever to actually get that market to get that phone to market. And by the time they did, the iPhone had come in, taken the market share, and moved forward. And the other thing, Palm didn't have enough money in those days to be able to put it on some quality hardware. So that first Palm Pre that came out was just a nightmare. And so, Rich, the Palm OS really is. I mean, if you look at you have a Touch, right? And do you have an iPod Touch or an iPhone, or are you familiar with iPhone. Okay, so really, it's not all that much different than the iPhone from the way it looks and feels standpoint. There's some different functionality in it. It has this idea of a card motif. So when you have an application up, you can minimize the application. It goes back into the kind of the background, and you can slide those cards side to side to get your application open. Where in the iPhone, you shut the application down every time, right?
No, I like that.
Yeah.
I like that better than the iPhone.
Right. Yeah. So you could have Pandora running, put it in the background, bring up your email, and be listening to Pandora while you're doing your email. You know, try to do that on an iPhone. I don't know if you can do that today. You might be able to. You couldn't 2 years ago when the Palm Pre first came out. So had some nice advantages. I don't know, Andrew, am I missing anything? It's got a nice browser. It was.
Yeah, you can stack your apps. It does Flash.
Flash was the was. An,
oh,
did we mention that it does that? Flash?
Yeah.
Jeez. Yeah. So now you want one for $99?
Well, Flash was a blessing and a cursing because Flash is resource intensive and is a battery destroyer, and so you know you have Flash or your battery life's gonna go down. You know, so there was some trade-offs in there, but a very good, very solid. It just didn't crash very often. It's a very, at least in my opinion, a very solid OS. And of course, I was a Palm fanboy from way back in the Palm 3 days, you know, with the little PDAs that you would sync to your PC. And so I kind of fell in love with it when it came out as well. I'm probably a little biased, I'll admit.
Very good explanation. Yeah. Thank you.
Does that help?
Yeah. Yeah, no, definitely.
Yeah,
I really like the idea of the UI. You know, it sounded like they had a, you know, in a lot of ways, a much better UI.
It was an intuitive UI.
Yeah,
I think. And
yeah, I think
this is a shame. It sounds like intuitive.
Say that again, Andrew.
The brief play I've had with it seems very intuitive. It just works. You know, yeah. The whole card thing, and you can. The other thing, nice thing is you can stack apps too. So say if you've got if you've got a browser window open and you want to have your email with the card thing that Jim was saying, you can stack, say, your email client, you can stack your calendar, and you can stack your IM all in one card deck, and then you can rotate between those as well. So it's kind of like the notion of a virtual desktop.
Yeah. Yeah. And it looks a lot like that in Windows 7 when you hold the Alt key down.
Windows tab.
And the screen, you know, the windows go up on the screen and then you can move them over. Same thing on the screen, just imagine being able to do that with your finger. One of the nice things about the Palm Pre is it was absolutely also full keyboard, full QWERTY keyboard, and you could get to it with one hand. So after a year, I could, with my thumb, man, I could type on that QWERTY keyboard just like a madman. And so you could have the phone under the table and just kind of, you know, typing away on that thing. And it was fast to operate. Then with the card motif, it was fast to operate those cards too on the phone. So you'd bring up your apps, and if you needed to close a few things, just push those things right off the screen and they're gone. And it closes them down. So, yeah.
That's a really nice thing I like about it as well. You know, you want to close an app, you just flick it off the screen.
It closes it out and you're done. I think there's some, you know, we say the WebOS is dead. We have to really say at this point, HP has made the decision not to push forward with it, but they may still license that OS out. I mean, I can't see them just stopping completely with it. I mean, it's an asset where it could show up in printers. It could show up in smaller devices. It'd be a great embedded device. Show up in some embedded equipment.
Well, that's what one of the announcements was just after we bought Palm. I think it was a $1.2 billion acquisition, $1.28
right.
something like that. That was the original announcement, was, you know, the WebOS is going to appear in all the printer consoles and the touch screens and things like that. And then that's why this is even more of a surprise. It's like, well, what happened to embedding it in a printer? You know, what happens to putting it in the preboot environment on Windows? You know, imagine a Jim on one of those 28-inch touchscreen PCs that you have in your kitchen.
Right.
You know, you want something that comes up bang and it's on, and if you don't need Windows, you're away.
Yeah, I like it. I think there's some real usefulness in there. I think, Andrew, and I'll take a shot at this. I don't have any evidence, but I think what happened at HP is what happens at Microsoft sometimes, is it's not how good your product is, it's how powerful you are in a division. And I'm just not sure the Palm division ever got fully integrated in at HP, and there's a lot of pressure to cut costs, right? And it's just easy to go, you know what, I know we've got that portfolio of patents is worth $1.2 billion just the way it is. So I think you can, since you work for them, you can reserve the right not to say anything.
I know nothing.
Yeah.
Look, I suspect to a degree you're right. I mean, I think any organization that's got 400,000 staff struggle to integrate a new business unit. I know when we got acquired, you know, when they acquired EDS, EDS was a 170,000 employee organization. So to merge that into another business that was already at 180,000,
yeah.
Plus, you know, it's a monumental task. I mean, Palm, I think, only came in with about 15,000-20,000 people, but you know, even to merge that number of people in is a fairly extensive exercise. And then to take a product line that you don't really have already, and to try and, you know, actively push it and assimilate. It's kind of like assimilating the Borg in a way, isn't it? Mm-hmm. You've got to bring this thing in and then make something of it to move forward.
Right, right. I think they struggle with it. I mean, yeah, look, they struggled with Compact for how long? And I still don't think the Compact division is still ever really all the way in there at HP. And this is what they're jettisoning for the most part with their – With this concept of moving the PC division out is really jettisoning the Compact division for the most part. So,
well, that's what Compact did, wasn't it? It was the PC desktop,
right?
So, yeah. You know, at the moment, from what we know, they're keeping the ProLiant business division and they're keeping printers. So, you know, going back to probably what was more core in the business.
So, does the micro server has a chance then? That, do you think, is that going to stay out there? The ProLiant micro server that we all talk about all the time.
I think it'll hang around for a while. I don't. Okay. We've heard anecdotally through the press, because we don't see it internally.
Right.
That the micro server is getting an upgrade in processor, but believe it when it hits the market.
Because I heard on MSWHS, Philip Churchill's website, he was saying something. There was an article there that somebody had pointed out that the micro server is part of the enterprise area instead of the PCs. So they say those guys are not affected.
Yeah, so. That's right. So I think what the future of the ProLiant family is, that it'll become part of an enterprise service and a tech services offering, which is sort of more, you know, your corporate level.
Yeah, it's just stuff. Now with a few things going on there. Well, like, that's it. Like, they got rid of the MediaSmart. They got now rid of these guys. They got rid of a few things people were saying, you know. So it's a bit like, you know, if HP is going to come up with a new laptop or something, somebody will probably look, you know, say, does Asus or Acer, do they have something like that? Because I don't know if I'll buy the one from HP.
Yeah.
Because
they
might just decide to drop it, you know. So
and part of what exists in the laptop division is interesting to me too, because they bought Voodoo to get the Envy line of machines, and to me that's that thing's just kick-ass. I mean, it's the closest Intel platform you'll get to a Mac in form factor and construction. You know, it's all single piece aluminium. It's a beautiful, beautiful machine.
But Andrew, wasn't the Voodoo purchase really in response to Dell buying Alienware and HP wanting to? I mean, wasn't that in the day when HP wanted to be a consumer market, you know, PC consumer? I mean, I just think the tide has changed. And
I think it was also to compete with Apple.
Yeah, well, sure.
From a form factor perspective.
And I think they've realized that there's no money in PCs. I mean, it's just there aren't. It's the bottom's gone. It's fallen out for the most part. And it's a very, you know, you've got to create crap on the Windows side. You've got to create crap and sell it to the
end users
at five, you know, at $299.
Yeah,
you know, and there is the PC itself has no respect anymore in the marketplace. And it's always about lowest price. where somehow Apple, and let's make that transition here real quick. So, of course, Steve Jobs has decided to resign, and I don't think anybody didn't see that coming. Nobody knew when that would happen. But somehow Apple has been able to keep through just coolness, been able to keep the price up and keep that form factor up. Listen, if HP is selling their computers at $1,500, right? Their bottom end computers for $1,500. They're not jettisoning their PC division, right?
Yeah.
And so somehow Mac has kept that cool. Rich, let me ask you this question: What do you think is going to happen now at Apple? Does the legacy of Steve Jobs hang on for a while? It's like when a football coach leaves a program, you know, when a championship football coach leaves a program, and that program stays good for a couple years just because his legacy holds on, but then the bottom falls out 3 or 4 years after that when the new guy's kids come on board. Do you think that'll happen at Apple?
Well, maybe to some degree, but you got to figure that the people that have been around him for how long has he been sitting on top of this as a CEO?
Right, 10, 15 years, maybe.
Yeah, you know, you got to figure he's got his people around him. I mean, he doesn't seem like he's a guy that would probably put up with a lot of free thinkers outside of what he sees as a vision for the company. So I would have to assume that anybody takes his place and anybody below that person are probably going to be pretty well dialed into his way of thinking, his vision. So I don't see it changing. It's going to look probably pretty much like a Steve Jobs-led company for the near future anyway, you know. And over time, the personalities, you know, will come out, and maybe you'll see some directions that you'll say, well, maybe Steve wouldn't have done that, but this is interesting. But I think it's probably in really good hands. I mean, I just have the impression with Steve Jobs, there wasn't a lot of, leeway outside of that vision.
Yeah, no, I would agree with you.
Yeah.
I would agree.
Yeah, that's what I heard. I heard, this guy, it's a bit like the way the company is structured, it's almost like it's structured all around him. Right. You know, he makes a decision, and all the big decisions funnel down. So people are organized in such a way that everything basically comes down to his decision. So, you know, if they're used to having a, you know, president or somebody, whoever it is, calling the shots, running that way, whereas most organizations don't, it's like, if he passed away tomorrow, and then it's like these people are a bit like, you know, we need another Steve Jobs there, because this is how we bring our information forward. So if we don't have somebody to replace him and operate the way he operates, because some of the other guys would say, I'm not touching that. Yeah. You know, it's like everything comes down to me. Whereas him, he's like, dude, I signed the bottom line on everything. So I think that for them to change that mentality to go into something different, it's going to take a few years. Like you said, Jim, it's a bit like, you know, he's kind of, you know, did the rule book, and everybody's kind of doing it his way. And, they're just pre-programmed that way. So for these guys to kind of decide to go on another direction, like who knows what these stockholders are going to say? Look, you know, the company is it's pretty good the way it is now. Do we want to make a different change? I don't know.
Mm-hmm. He's gonna stay on as chairman, and so I think what drives Apple's success, and this might be, I don't know how it'll be taken, but I think what drives Apple's success is fear. This is what I hear when I hear the media talk about the reign, the reign of Steve Jobs. It's the reign of fire, from what I understand. When he holds that company with a very tight fist and has demanded and expected a lot of respect from his leadership role. And I think you're with him or you're out. And so everybody that is gathered around him is very loyal and very, and I think he's brilliant when it comes to product and product design. Now, not everything he's done in his career has been the most brilliant, but he sure made a lot of right decisions. Mm-hmm. I think once he's gone, and I hope he's with us for a while. I mean, I still like to see Apple be successful. But I think once he passes on and that reign of fear is over, I think Apple gets 3 or 4 years of the Steve Jobs legacy, and then I think they start producing crap again. I mean, I just it'll get, the company will fragment. There'll be no one person. Everybody will be compared to Steve Jobs.
I'm biting my tongue right now not to say, yeah. go right down the tube.
No, I don't think we want that, Rich.
Can we delete that?
It's, you know what, it's easy because I said earlier in the show I'm an underdog guy, right? I like the underdog. And it's easy when someone's at the top to want to bring them down. And Rich, I'm with you. I'm agreeing with you. I'd love to see. There's been times that totalitarian type of the way he's run that organization has bothered me, but it's absolutely been its success. And so, Rich,
I don't really mean that. I mean, what I get a kick out of, though, is the people that just drink that Kool-Aid. I mean, come on. You can like it. Don't drink the Kool-Aid, you know? Be aware of what you're talking about here. You know, yeah. The product, you know, when Apple crashes, well, it doesn't give you the blue screen of death. It just stops working.
Yeah.
You know? It crashes.
Well, but let's remember it wasn't too many years ago that they were the underdog, right? And all these, remember these rabid Mac fans, like 10 of them? That were you know, oh man, the culture of Mac. I mean, they're finally getting their moment in the sun, and they just love to rub it into the PC folks because the PC kicked Apple's butt for a decade.
Yeah.
I mean, Microsoft just cleaned up on Apple for so long until Jobs came back, and it really. And Mac's success is still only credited, and again, I'll get lots of letters, podcasts at theaverageguy.tv. I still say their success is only on the back of the iPod. That doesn't make it. That doesn't go anywhere. Apple is still a pretty minor influence.
And I would love to see Microsoft actually start producing their own hardware, building their own machines like Apple does. And then let's see a head-to-head. You know, I think that would be interesting.
Yeah, but Microsoft, I don't think has the guts to do that. There's a lack of intestinal fortitude at Microsoft.
Wow, you know, maybe they don't. But I'll tell you what, I think it would be a pretty good bet because, you know, some of the biggest problems with the Microsoft, with the PC, is the wide variety of hardware it's got to support.
Yeah, but how are they going to take 10 years to reel that in?
No, I don't think so. I think you just have to stop supporting, you know, a billion different hardware.
Yeah, but I'm sure they have all these contracts and stuff like that where
I know they can't do it. You're absolutely right. They got contracts. They're tied in. This is just a dream. It's just a fantasy.
Hopefully, if they get rid of
Wouldn't it be nice?
Are you defending Microsoft?
Steve Ballmer, then maybe that might be a good way.
Well, now that's a whole other
subject. Let's get rid of Steve Ballmer, and then now let's start, you know, tightening the belt there. Let's make a couple of cuts. Let's introduce a hardware platform and stuff. Maybe when they change guard like that, then that might be a good time
let's get the Windows Phone 7 updates on time, right? We can get Steve Ballmer out. We can actually maybe get a better, toehold with these manufacturers to actually get our updates and the cell phone provider, we can't even get they can't even get their updates out. You know, they've got this update that's been sitting there in the chute for over a half a year. And it's not rolled out.
Yeah, there is a little bit of paralysis in that system at Microsoft as well that just does not allow them to move. Well, and this guy's – I mean, this is the natural business cycle that exists, so, right? We've consolidated down to the big five for the most part. And these companies are so large now, they just – it's very, very, very difficult for them to be effective in these kinds of ways. And in this Microsoft debate, they've got to be backwards compatible to everything. They've got a huge – I mean, there's infighting in Redmond. One division pitted against another. They've got their own problems there. There's not an easy solution to fix Microsoft either. I just spent the day or a half a day with Google Wednesday. Wednesday morning I spent a half day with Google and some of their Google salespeople talking about business apps. And Google's making a hard run at the business app space, and they want to sell enterprise licenses. No, I'm sorry. They want to sell email and apps licenses to corporations at $50 a seat. everybody pays the same price. Whether you're the biggest Fortune 500 company in the world, you're the U.S. government, or you're the mom and pop shop down the street, $50 a seat. You know, to get on their email and apps platform. You know, I did a little math, and for a company of 2,000, that's way cheaper than buying Exchange and SharePoint.
Oh, absolutely.
Yeah. You know, so you think now it's not as mature, but it's got, you know, the email piece is there. So Google's jumping into this space. Right?
Isn't Office 365 supposed to be like $6 per user? Were they like the email?
It's as cheap as $6 per user, yeah. I think.
Per month.
Once you wrap it up in a custom domain and Active Directory authentication and stuff like that, the price, I think it comes up to 30. At the moment, BPOS, I think, comes in at about $35 a mailbox, which is mail only, which is their cloud, their Exchange 2010 in the cloud.
Yeah, well, Microsoft's licensing, you know, reads like a law book at times, and it's convoluted and difficult. This is one area where Google could stand out. It's $50 a seat for everybody per year. $50 per year per seat. That's what you pay. Now, they do have a nickel and dime in the sense that they're going to charge you $13 to keep that your data for a year and $33 to keep it for 10. And you know, there's some policies that you can put on the accounts and stuff and lock things down in certain ways. But it's fairly reasonable for
I reckon
some large businesses that pay. I mean, the software costs, I've seen Microsoft's licensing model and Google seriously undercutting that. But they're working hard to get in that space as well. Now, they're the underdogs, and everybody loves Google and everybody loves Android. Will we be saying the same thing about Android 5 years from now when it's dominating and they can't get things done right? And
I think the other thing that'll be interesting to see too is that when you look at that with the cost modeling, what most people don't take into account, you pay your license costs, but you also have to pay a specialist to run your infrastructure.
Right.
So if you're in the enterprise and you've got, you know, I don't know, 10,000 staff. So 10,000 staff, you're going to need maybe two Exchange servers. You know, you need one body to run it. But, you know, out here, you know, you pay 120 to 150 grand for that person's skill set. That goes a long way to paying $50 a mailbox to throw it all in the cloud and let Google worry about the infrastructure.
Right, and a very scalable infrastructure at that. I mean, they've already proven they can scale out pretty well. Mike Howard in chat says, but Google Docs are only for the light users and they're not for the power users. I'd say he's absolutely right, but in most organizations, it's about 95% light users and 5% power users. So buy 5% of the Microsoft licenses for your power users and let everybody else be on Gmail.
Yeah, although for the most part, what I'm seeing with our enterprise clients is what the ones that are going to the cloud, they're only moving the server component to the cloud. So they're moving, they move email and they still use Outlook. They still use the whole Office suite. They're just removing the Exchange server piece out of the equation.
Let me be a heretic. I don't think in most organizations you need, when we talk about the apps, and let's use Outlook because everybody's familiar with Outlook, right?
Yep.
But so we'll leave that off the table. But my contention is in the enterprise, 80% of the people don't need Word or Excel or a powerful version of Excel for that matter. You know, you got a couple power users that are building now. You know, Mike's an accountant, and so he's going to go the other way because, of course, he uses Excel every day, and I'm sure he's got macros built in, and it's fabulous. He might even have an Excel data warehouse buried somewhere in his environment. But that majority is so small. I mean, I just think about your average worker who really just needs something to read Word documents and do their email, and I think with the Google Mail or Gmail and the apps, the Google apps, you can hit 75 to 85% of your enterprise and make it work.
Yep, I'd agree with that.
I don't know. Guys, Rich, John?
I don't know. That high percentage, maybe 70%.
I think it does depend on the organization. Let me give it that it goes by company to company, but the usage, from what I've seen, the usage of a lot of these tools is so low. You know, this freaking Microsoft Office is so powerful now. It does so many things, and I just see people just barely scratching the surface of it.
Mm.
You know,
yeah, I'm one of the worst offenders with that. I use Outlook and begrudgingly use Excel.
Yeah,
hate PowerPoint with a passion.
Yeah, well, Excel is probably the one exception in all this, right? Excel is one of those tools, but I guess I can't really even tell you the last time I created a Word document. Rich, do you create Word documents where you work?
Yeah, well, no, not where I work, but every day, you know, I'm sitting here taking notes in Word. I suppose I could just do it in Notepad or Google Docs, but I like the way it formats. Yeah, I'm just used to it. You know
yeah,
I mean?
Oh, sure.
I like the way, yeah, I'm used to the formatting tools and whatnot. So nothing fancy, as you said. I mean, I'm probably using like, you know, 2% of the capabilities, if that. But no, just a matter of preference and what you're used to from the start, you know, over time.
Yeah.
Well, a lot of people, you know, the thing, the goal is to have things, you know, very simple, like basically a simple application that very easy to use, but very like, you know, secure and that's like, you know, like you said, as far as like scaling this and that, like a lot of people can use it and it's not going to break down and that type of thing, but make it simple. You know, that's what a lot of people, that's what it seemed, that's why it seemed that the, like Apple, like with the iPad, that's why it's a success, because now more people, like, you know, the group of people that were before, you had a lot of people buying PCs and stuff. They were, you know, gamers and, you know, hardcore systems and stuff like that. Now you have more casual people getting into PCs, you know, your mom and your grandparents, this and that. And they just want to consume their device. They just want to get a little bit of email and this and that. So more people are getting into it and using it for everyday little things, you know. And that's it. With the fact that it's an instant on and this and that, it's like, okay, yeah, you know, I can fire off, you know, like a quick email or this and that. Look at texting, right? I mean, the generation of texting, we didn't have that five, six years ago, you know. So it's like, you know, if everybody has these apps or these devices there that's simple communication for email or texting or video, like if Skype, you know, continues to be very simple and stuff, a lot of people will get into this, you know. So keep it simple. I say as far as these apps are, like, keep it simple and but secure. You know, that's it. The people, maybe like, you know, let's say we underestimate PowerPoint and let's say Outlook, Office there and all of that stuff. I mean, it's a very powerful software, but, you know, it's secure as far as I think. That's my opinion. I think it's very secure. You know, I mean, yes, we don't use all the power tools and this and that. We use it very simply, but we have confidence in using that product.
So yeah, it's local Google, to your company network.
Yeah, so hopefully that's it. I don't mind things being simpler and to get more people into it and using it and have a little bit easier communication. Just like I think, you know, you see like a Facebook and all of these guys where, you know, to make your profile that you can move from different sites and, you know, kind of bring your information with you around and stuff like that. And imagine you go to the bank and you have to give some information at the bank. Somehow you can just, you know, send your information to them and, you know, so you don't have your sort of like your identity move easily around with you and stuff, you know, communicate easy. So this is what I want to see as far as these apps.
Yeah, well,
maybe Google can pull that off.
Let me say this. I think Microsoft could pull this off. I'm not being anti-Microsoft on this one, but the concept of a Word client and an Excel client is dinosauric. I mean, it's like 1990. Yeah. The idea that I have a client on my PC that I save a file to somewhere and have to drop that in an email as an attachment and collaborate in that methodology is stupid. I mean, we're doing show notes live right now and it could be anything. This could be Office 360. It could be Google Docs. It could be OneNote or Evernote, or it could be, right, any of those things provide it. But the idea is, I mean, I'm not creating a Word document and then sending it to you, Andrew, for you to fill in, and then you send it to Rich, and then you. I mean, we've those. And then what's happening today, at least in the environments that I'm a part of, is so much of the decision making that's going around is being done inside of email, right? I mean, it's nobody cares about format anymore. Nobody cares about what the document looks like, or even if it's spelled right for in most cases.
Are you kidding me?
Yes. No, I'm not kidding you.
Oh, my gosh.
I'm a spelling Nazi, but, you know, it frustrates the heck out of me when I see stuff that's spelled wrong. But I don't know exactly
it drives me about, mad when...
It's about getting across the point, though.
But Rich,
well, it drives me mad when people can't use, like, a comma. Like, well, I have to read the sentence three times because I didn't understand that they meant to pause after those first three words. So I'm trying to make sense of this nonsensical sentence when it's like, you know what? Come on. Drop a comma in there, you know?
Rich, you know, you should watch a lot of people spell how check. People text now.
No, I know how they text. I'm okay with the texting, you know. I'm okay with the texting, but if you're actually going to write up something, a communication to somebody else, it's nice to punctuate it, you know. It's nice to make yourself clear and understood, you know.
See, but there, Jim, the thing is, you kind of wonder, like, you know, using, like you said, with Office or document or this and that and sending it as an attachment, like, how much of that is actually, like, the infrastructure that's there that is secure? I mean, here, if you're writing in Google Docs and something is, I mean, is this really secure? I mean, can other people like jump into this and grab it? And
do we really
know that how secure this is?
Yeah,
if the file breaks down, can you get a backup of it and stuff like that? Is all that underlying, you know, security thing that we are we taking it for granted that it's
okay?
It's
so how do they handle that? You got to be handling it.
You got to figure Microsoft, after years and years of working at Office, there's some stuff going on there that we don't know about that's, like, you know, taking care of stuff. At least I think so. You know, it's like, why is that program 100 meg or however big it is? I mean, that's
because the FBI can see everything you type. Yeah, okay.
Well, but in my point to John, my point to you in that, and my point to Mike Howard, who's absolutely crawling out of his skin in chat right now, he just wants to reach through my PC and choke me, is those scenarios that you're talking about and those scenarios that Mike is talking about are 1-5% of the usage of these products inside the enterprise. The other 95% of, and maybe that number's too high, I'll even give you 20%. How's that sound? 20-80% of that, of what goes on, the communication that goes on in the enterprise, is simple communication, whether done via IM or email, that does not require these powerful tools to secure or lock down. I mean, we use an IM client that doesn't even hold a history. So you open it, you type in it, you close it, it's gone. Right, I mean, that we've done that on purpose. We don't want to keep those records. It's instant communication. We don't record telephone calls. Why would we want to keep instant chat and create more data clutter? Right, that can be e-discovered, by the way. And if your policy is that you don't keep it, it can't be e-discovered. Right. So, who dropped? I just heard something.
I'm still here.
You're all here. Oh, it was Rich. Rich must have got so mad at me, he just dropped off. Rich, hopefully you'll come back here in a second. But
I like it, like you said. I like it that it's simple, but I want to make sure that, you know, that I'm not losing any type of security, you know, in the trade-off.
Sure.
That's it. Keep it simple so more people get into it and stuff like that. Yes, you know, like Rich said, you know, the thing is that people now they're typing, they're forgetting their commas, or they're typing, spelling the word the wrong. You know, it's like, this is three letters. It's T-H-E, not T-E-H, you know? So many times I see these spelling mistakes. It's like, you know, maybe like build that client in a little bit. But yeah, keep it simple, but keep it secure.
Uh-oh, Rich went completely offline.
He's really offline.
He's gone.
His hours.
Sorry, Rich. Yeah, he was like, he ran out of nickels to put in there. Well, let me wrap this up. Mike, I know that you're out there just going crazy with me, and I'm baiting you a little bit, right? So it's
so am I.
But I think there is a point there, and that we all need to be careful. It's the same, you know. It's the same thing we come at when we come at it from the home server show perspective, and home servers and servers. We are a small segment of the population, a very small, very tiny segment that even understands or gets backup in the home, right? And most people are like, I don't, you know, why would you even need that? They think they know, but they really don't. Same thing. I think
if it's on the computer, it's safe.
It's safe. They don't want to deal with it. I think the same thing is true in the enterprise if we get outside of the specialty users, in that we've got 80% of our enterprise users who really use about 1% of all the capabilities that are available inside some of these tools that we use. And this idea, and I'll address Excel in particular here, we create these Excel files that should be actually done now inside of Microsoft Excel services where these aren't files that live somewhere in a file store. They're exposed to the user with security on them that creates an online-like version for Excel. Still all the power of Excel, but true collaboration in that environment, not I'm saving this Excel file out there somewhere and I'm going to email it to somebody and it's going to be an attachment and there's 8 different versions of it and it can be saved off. I mean, that kind of stuff is old school to me. Files shouldn't even be allowed to exist, to be honest.
Well, even I think, like, isn't that one of the things that now with the new Lion OS, like the way they're doing like their file structures and this and that, like it's a bit of a different concept. And from what I hear with Windows 8, they're supposed to get rid of this type of like Explorer type environment, like files and all of this stuff. It's like, you know, this is old. Why do we see this stuff? Why do we click on, you know, see code on my computer, program files, slash, but why do I see all this stuff?
You know, it's a you bit don't like do it on your phone.
Back in the day when you had DOS, you know, it's like, you know, format, see code, my, why do I see files? I want to be able just to do what I have to do and not have to deal with all of this other this stuff that's going on. Yeah.
We certainly don't do it on our phones. I mean, there is no hint of a file structure on our phones. We just use them. I think the PCs need to catch up, and I especially think our corporate environment needs to catch up from that perspective. And this, like I said, this idea of files and file structures. And I'm not against Excel. It's a great tool. It has its place. But what I am saying is, I think a good chunk of our communication can be replaced with things that aren't so expensive and that don't require these massive licensing costs for Microsoft. And not everybody needs a copy of Word on their desktop. And not everybody needs Excel. I mean, we've taken Access out of the enterprise so people don't create these Access data warehouses, right? Oh, I gotta have it. No, you don't. Build it in the database. Well, I think sometimes in Excel, it's a very similar thing. If that data really needs to reside somewhere where people can see it, not locked up in a file on your file, you know, in your home drive. Anyways, all right. So enough of that. Well, we lost Rich in the process. I wonder if he just got mad at me and said, "That's it, I'm gone." Let's see if we can let's see if we can bring him back at all. Let's see if I can find him.
The other thing in the enterprise is stick it in SharePoint. You know, half the collaboration data that we have doesn't even need to be in a document. It can be in a in an embedded table in SharePoint or something like that. It's typically updating something that everyone wants to collaborate in. You know, so you build your table that way, give the people you want to be able to update it access to update it, and, you know, bang, it's done.
Yeah. I'd agree. Well, now that we've got everybody pissed at us, I love it. And I hope Rich is really just having technical problems and not mad at us. Rich had a whole topic around. I was just getting to that. Rich had a topic built around the new processors and some Intel work. And he's not here to talk about it. All right, Andrew, what do you got? You got anything else on that or on anything else?
Nothing of any value. But hang on, that's
just my opinion.
Is Rich still online? Hold on one sec. Are you there? Let's. I'll edit this out. All right. Maybe he dropped out so he could hack back in. And that's a good thing. I didn't have Mike Howard on the show tonight. He'd have killed me.
Yeah, fire up.
I'm smoking.
Let's see. One more sec, guys. Let's see if we can get Rich back here.
Oh, okay. He's just put into the notes. Skype hung up on him. Or hung on him.
And look at that. See, he's collaborating through Google Docs.
Yeah, see, without Google Docs, we'd be hosed.
Yeah.
Did he put that in the Google Doc?
Yeah.
Nice. See? See, all the communication you need is all right there.
See, Jim, you were right.
To the cloud.
Yeah. Oh, I think I'm just seeing in the enterprise more and more the importance of more and more online collaboration, you know, in the form. And even a wiki, the idea of a wiki is kind of not exactly, you know, this idea where multiple people can jump in and deal with one document all at the same time and keep the document integrity as a part of it is really I think is really the wave of the future. I think that's where we're going to land. And so we got to try more of that. Okay, did Rich come back?
We do the same thing. We've got a lot of wikis that run off SharePoint. We used to use what's it called, TikiWiki or MediaWiki or something like that.
There's Rich.
We've been slowly migrating all those to SharePoint.
Yeah. Hey, Rich, what happened? You there? Oh, okay.
Grab something to eat.
Just chewing. Were you just so hungry you hung up and went and got something to eat?
Oh, what was that?
I got hung up. Grapes.
Oh, okay.
Grapes. Right. Grapes.
Well,
yeah, it hung up on me. I mean, it just like froze on me.
Just froze, and we just dropped it. I was hoping you weren't just mad at me and had decided to hang up.
Yeah. No.
Rich, before the show, you were talking a little bit about some of these new chips at Intel, and I didn't completely follow. What you were talking about. I was trying to get the show started at the time, but walk us through briefly. This will be our last story. Walk us through briefly what you kind of discovered today.
Well, Jim,
since I just got you off guard.
First, let me stop eating this grape and let me bring up these notes. It's
Hopefully Google Docs won't crash on you.
Well, and Howard's trying to hack into our Google Docs right now as we speak. So
he could probably do it. So I was listening to BYOB the other day, and they were talking about SSDs. And so I was thinking about SSDs. And I went online, and I started looking at SSDs, and I noticed a couple of things. And I says, well, let me go check Enantech and see what's going on over there. So I was looking – this is a kind of a long way to tell you about something that I stumbled across. Anyway, it's one of those things where you start off here, you kind of follow this. Oh, that's interesting. I ended up on a site called Micron Technologies. And this is a company that's in a partnership with Intel, and they're developing chips. Yeah, they're developing memory and chips together. So they have a joint venture going on there. So I'm looking at Micron Technologies website, and I'm saying, well, who is this? You know, what's going on? What are they doing? And I saw something that said hybrid memory cube. So I says, well, what's that? So I started looking at it, and it's a technology that they're working on that is basically, how did I say this? It is supposed to reduce the bottleneck between the memory and the CPU. So basically what that translates to is that the memory is fast enough to actually output more than the data path, the data channel will allow to the CPU and back and forth. With this new technology that that Micron Technologies is developing, it's supposed to increase chip speed just like that 20-fold. So that means your memory increases 20-fold. How that translates to performance, I'm not quite sure, but it sounds like it could be pretty good. What else do I see about this? They just talk about how power requirements are greatly reduced. It uses maybe as much as 1/10 the amount of energy per bit as conventional memory architecture. And then it's just smaller. Something about the design of this is smaller. Again, this is stuff I just read earlier tonight, but I was looking at this and I go, this is fascinating. So I was excited. You know, I'm thinking, wow, you know, we got DDR2 and then we have DDR3 and, you know, what's coming next? Maybe DDR4 or maybe this hybrid cube, memory cube technology. Well, forget it. We won't see it as consumers until like 2015. Enterprises, you know, people that are running cloud computing networks, maybe Google themselves, we'll see it maybe next year, definitely by 2013, according to their projections. But it's fascinating, and it's supposed to be one of these, it looks like to me, one of these, the next big thing, a nice breakthrough in memory technology. So,
well, you'd said in your note, I think before you took it out here, that this extends Moore's law, right? I mean, it's one of those kind of technologies that
that's another thing. No, that was something else I was talking about, which is the Ivy Bridge. That's the next process.
Oh, okay.
Yeah, now that's interesting too. So, this is a technology. At this point, we're talking about the transistors on the CPU themselves. And I'm sorry, I'm not going to be able to, I'll be able to tell you what the technology is. I won't be able to tell you specifically how it works. But basically what we have up till now is planar transistors, PLANAR. I think you pronounce it planar. There's a new type of transistor that's been around for a long time. It's called Trigate, but they haven't actually put it into a CPU until now, and that CPU is going to be Intel's next i7 offering, codename Ivy Bridge, or the actual name Ivy Bridge. Right now we're on Sandy Bridge processors like the i7 2600K or the i3 2100. This next process, this next chip coming out is going to be using this Trigate transistor technology. And the thing about this is that it runs cooler and it runs faster. It can switch on and off faster than the transistors we have now. So that by itself makes the processors, you know, more powerful and run cooler at the same time. And that's what we've got coming. When is this coming out? Ivy Bridge is coming when? This fall, maybe as early as this fall? So,
there's some good stuff. You know what? I'll use that, Rich, as a segue. We're going to do a BYOB. So these guys are all on top of that stuff. The guys over Build Your Own Box on the Homeschool Show. We're doing a live show with them on Saturday, 11 o'clock Pacific, 1 p.m. Central, 2 Eastern, and over at homeservershow.com. And these guys live and breathe that stuff. It's good to hear. I mean, from an average guy perspective, Rich, that's going to be a technology that hits the market this winter, this fall, this winter, next spring. I think it'll probably hit in the mass markets places where the average guy is finding its way into the average guy's PC, probably around the springtime. Sandy Bridge, you know, the Sandy Bridge came out and then there were some problems with it, and then it kind of relaunched again. And now I'm seeing that showing up everywhere inside consumer PCs.
Yeah.
I think we'll probably see that same Ivy Bridge. I don't know for sure, but I imagine the way things are going from a consumer standpoint, that'll make its way out the spring. Andrew, do you know any more?
I haven't seen anything. I haven't seen anything, but I think the biggest driver this day and age is power consumption, consumption and performance.
Well,
yeah, the other thing is heat, because I noticed like with these Atom boards there, right, when they came out with these Atom CPUs, like a lot of the computers got way quieter, way smaller, you know, and then now the i3, i5s, there's less heat coming off of those guys. So again, those computers are smaller and quicker, you know, so if, you know, you got the trade-off. You got your low-end Atom, and then you got your the other Sandy Bridge i3s and i5s, which are more powerful, but like they're a lot quieter. I mean, I bought my son it's a Mac, you know, so it's sometimes you have a laptop and you still heard the little fans on the side of the laptops, because even then they were sweating it out. And now it's like you have a laptop and it's like it's silent, you know.
Right. So, it's running cooler.
Yeah, so this is nice to see that's going on.
What are you showing us there, Andrew?
Showing us that's a player.
Michelle just walked in and put a Discman.
Panasonic.
There's a relic.
Yeah,
Rich,
Panasonic Mac.
We interrupted you a second ago.
Let me tell you one thing that's kind of cool about this Trigate. I sort of understand this a bit. When you switch a transistor on and off, you don't quite switch it 100% off on, and you don't quite switch it 0% off, you know, or 100% off, right? So when it's not, because it's not shut 100% off, there's a little bit of current leakage in a transistor, even though it's in an off state. That leakage contributes to the overall heat of the processor.
Sure.
Okay. Mm. And then the second point, so with its tri-gate, it's like if you grab the hose with one hand, the garden hose with one hand, you squeeze tight, you probably could slow it down so that it pretty much slows down to a trickle. But if you grab it with two or three hands, you're going to clamp it off so that nothing's coming out of that hose. That's sort of the analogy of how this tri-gate transistor works.
That's a good way of putting it.
So, yeah. So.
Well, that's it. It could use the different states. Like instead of using just on or off, it's okay, on is one condition, off is another condition. And then when it's like, let's say, switching states, that those are could also be another, like it's powering up. Could be a state, and then when it's powering down, could be a state. So sometimes you know things can actually be done faster, right? Because it's switching in the different modes. Anyway, a little high technical. I'll stop there.
Are you talking about like waveforms and leading edge and trailing
like
edge?
I've been playing around with like LEDs and stuff. And this is where you have some issue. If you send a current one way, it's one voltage. You send the current, it's another voltage. If you only give a certain amount of current, it's a different. You have multiple ways just of giving applying current, not applying, adding a little bit or adding a lot. You have all these different states. So these are in binary or like in logic and stuff. These all produce different results. So you can, if you take that all into consideration, you can take advantage of that. But anyway, that starts to get a little technical.
You guys make me feel so dumb.
You're pretty funny. Guy was an AS/400 computer running a Power 5, Power 6 processor from IBM, who nobody's ever heard of, but it's like this mega killer processor, right? Yeah, whatever. Okay, forget it. It's a little glitch there, a little tangent thing.
Everyone knows what an AS400 is. Come on.
Yeah, right.
But nobody's ever actually seen one. That's the thing.
Andrew has.
It's everybody knows. Everybody's heard the term AS400, but nobody's actually ever seen one of those things.
Yeah. So in a big basement somewhere with the air conditioning.
Yeah. Yeah. The last place I worked at, they put one in, a new one, and a big database.
They have new ones.
They do. They haven't. Yeah, they do have these new ones. And or maybe they just painted it. But anyways, it was it wouldn't fit through a maybe that's IBM. It wouldn't
was
fit
it black or white?
through the door. They had to actually come in on the weekend, remove the door, cut the drywall out.
This is killing me because this is what I was talking with Andrew the other night, and we were just going back, and he said something about this mainframe computer, and I thought he was just making a total joke, and I'm like, oh yeah, you mean the guys with the nerd glasses and the white lab coat, or it's pushing their glasses up on their nose and taking notes, looking at. And but you were serious. You're talking about a modern day mainframe.
It was sort of the replacement for
Well, guys, that's not average, guys.
That's all right. it's stuff the average tech guy deals with at work, maybe, and not everybody has one of those. It's a very, very fast transactional system, and it still has its place. A lot of banks still use AS400 in their deposit systems, and so they're out there. They are big behemoth machines. I mean, they craned this thing down into the basement and then slid it in and cut the door out. And they had to call for they had to have an electrician there to remove wires and set it. They had to run new power in. I mean, it was a big deal to get this thing in the data center when it came in.
Big, they're big boxes.
They are.
I remember we decommissioned one about 15 years ago that. I think it was 19 cabinets long, and each cabinet was about the size of a bookshelf.
Yeah, yeah. They don't have a concept of small, or rack, right? Or rack mounted. that doesn't on those kinds of things. That doesn't matter. It seems
it comes with its own rack.
It is its own rack. Unlike, I was going to say, unlike Oracle's Exadata, but that's a whole nother show. So anyways, we have gone way too long. John, you know what? I'm going to have you back on. I want you to talk a little bit. You had teased us before the beginning of the show about some of the work that you're doing, and you showed us a little circuit board. So hold that up, and we will we'll have to come back around. Yeah, you're going to be working on that project for a while, or is that just kind of a short term?
No, for a little while. There's other people interested in stuff like that, so I'm going to have some printed circuit. Because what's cool is I use this software and from a company called ExpressPCB, and to design the first you do like a schematic, like that's basically you want a schematic to see how everything works, and then you create printed circuit boards and you send them the order, and they have the machinery that does it, and then they send you back the printed circuit boards, and then you build it, and there you go. So it's I have to build a few of them. So
well, maybe I can bring you on the first part of the show next week, and you can kind of talk a little bit about the work that you're doing, because it sounds kind of cool.
Yeah,
right. It's average guy stuff, right?
Yeah, it's pretty neat how to think about how these different things work. You know, have a whole bunch of other little pieces communicating to each other efficiently. Yeah. You know,
John, is that you talked about a little train, you know, where it controls the trains and how they move and stuff. I mean, certainly that could that scale out to a large metropolitan automated type solution where all that equipment and real live cars and trains and stuff are controlled by this kind of software.
Yeah, well, that's it. Like, like these guys that have these stations, right? You know, where they have these the subways and they want to know where they are on the track and, communication, like GPS devices and stuff like that and where everything is and how it's a fantastic concept because then you know where everything is in its place, and then you start working on timetables and stuff like that, and you can become really efficient about how how you're going to organize your transportation system. So. Okay. It just gets really keeps going and going.
Well, a little tease maybe for next week, and maybe if you got a few minutes, you can join us for the first half of the show next week. How's that sound?
Sure. If you want to listen to that? Yeah,
a little bit. We you started that discussion by saying, remember when you had John Hughes on your show and you talked about home automation? Well, this is kind of like that on a bigger scale. So if you're interested in that topic. Listen back next week, and we'll have John back on for beginning of the show. Well, I want to let folks know if they want to send me nasty emails about why Microsoft Excel is the best program ever made and that nobody can live without it, they can send me an email, podcast@theaverageguy.tv. Mike Howard is never going to be my friend again. But you can send me those emails, and I can't guarantee I'll read them. But, it's good. It's good discussion. I want to let folks know if they also want to interact with us, we do have a Facebook page. You can go over, just type in the search bar, theaverageguy.tv in Facebook. And we've got a little community going over there. A couple of you have joined us. You can come in and get notifications. If you join the community, you'll get notifications when people update their posts. And, of course, the more we get in there, the merrier. And there's been some good topics, some good discussions. I want to invite you to join us for another podcast. Rich and I have been doing Rich's Random Podcast Generator on Sunday afternoons. You're welcome to, if you're a tech guy and you want to join us on the show, you can actually try out podcasting. We open that up in Google Hangout. You need to, and the word's not right, but you need to put me in your Google circle, I guess, or I need to put you in my circle. So contact me on Google Plus so we can get you in there. We'll have a brief little conversation. Then I'd like to have you on. If you just want to listen, watch for that. Watch for the show, or follow me on Twitter and watch for the show announcement on that as well. We also, Rich, you and I should start posting that to the, at least me, should start posting that to the Facebook page when we're going to do that show, so folks know. So lots of good things to do and lots of good things to listen to. Over there at theaverageguy.tv. One final reminder, we are switching RSS feeds here at the end of September, so you have just about a month left to cut your feed over from, if you're on iTunes, go back out to theaverageguy.tv and choose the iTunes icon, and that will reset up your feed so that you'll continue to get the podcast on September 30th. I will cut off Podomatic, and you will no longer get podcasts on the old RSS feed. I wish there was a way just to convert it and you didn't have to do anything, but unfortunately you do. So reset up your feed. If you're using an RSS feeder or reader or a Zune player or whatever, the RSS feed and all the code is over there at theaverageguy.tv as well for you to get that reset up, back up, go and do that. Rich, did you want to add anything to that?
I'm just telling Andrew, don't cry. We'll get him in on Rich's random podcast generator sooner or later.
Yeah, actually, Andrew,
I really need to do that Saturday night so I can be on this one.
Is it possible to do it later on Sunday nights and you wake up early Monday morning to join us? Would that be a possibility?
Yeah, I can do like a 6 a.m. start.
Okay. Yeah, we've been that might be the easiest. Saturday nights are just nuts for me usually, and so Sunday evenings, you know, if we did it 5 or 6 Central Time, I'm actually going to try and talk Rich into that this weekend. So see if I can get that pulled off. Okay, one last reminder. Next week we'll be given, or maybe I haven't even said this yet, next week we'll be giving away a Drobo on the show. Not on the show, but during the show. I have not said that yet. Okay, good. So next week, we're starting Monday at theaverageguy.tv, there will be some details about how to win a Drobo. So go out to theaverageguy.tv starting Monday morning. Listen to the show next Thursday. Do whatever you can, but win a Drobo. What do I have? I have a Drobo S. That we're giving away. 5-bay USB 3 and eSATA. Nice little unit.
USB 3.
Yeah. It's
whoa,
nice. It's easy.
Yeah.
To,
yeah. Nice. That fair, is nice.
Very
I'm entering.
Easy. Okay. I don't know if you're eligible, Rich.
Is that going to be open?
I don't know.
Are you a regular, Rich? Because I'm not a regular, so I think I qualify.
You know
Andrew's
what?
Out.
All
Andrew's
right.
Out.
Well, somebody named Joe Donuts will be entering. He'll have the same address as me, so yeah.
Would I trade a Drobo for a touchpad? Asked Jay. I don't know. Drobos are worth maybe a little bit more than touchpads are right now, so I'm not sure how that would work. All right, guys. Thanks for jumping in. We'll stay around for a little post-show chat, but have a great weekend, and we'll see you back next time.
Packet that's just destroyed everything for batting out on Excel.
He's gone.
I was trying to hit Jim with it. Sorry.
So let's talk about Excel.
You missed.
I'm ready.
Yeah.
We have to.
So what do you got, Howard? Bring it on.
Yeah.
Excel is the business tool. And it, when I'm.
Oh, sorry.
here's the thing. When I'm hiring new people today, let's say accountants or whatever, I don't care if you know an accounting package. That's crap, because whatever you learned in school is going to be different than what you use when you get out in the real world.
Right.
The one thing that you can learn in school that you will guarantee to use out in the real world is Excel.
Yeah, I don't disagree with you.
If you're hiring an accountant, they better know Excel or else I wouldn't hire them.
My point wasn't that Excel's crap, even though we said that. And I did. I don't think I said that.
But it goes beyond just accountants. You know, our finance team uses it when we interact with lawyers. A lot of times we're sending data back and forth with the lawyers.
Yeah. People use it. That wasn't my point. My point is that we use it very, very archaically, right? We create files.
Yeah.
Those files have –
Yeah, let's wrap it off first, Jim, Rich.
Those files live in a file structure. And you know, especially with accounting people, they're paranoid about who can see what, so they lock that file structure down, right? And then it's like, well, come over to this. I'm going to send you the spreadsheet, or I'm going to send you the link to the spreadsheet. That drives me even crazier that people would send links to file structures, and then go to it. Oh, I can't get to it. Oh, then they got to call the network security guy. Grant access to the, you know.
Right.
That it's that concept that to me that's outdated, right? And this is where Excel services should be kicking in on SharePoint.
Yeah,
go ahead. No, go ahead.
Well, what people do, and I have a lot of pet peeves that I critique my people over, and one of them is they link a spreadsheet to another spreadsheet,
right?
And you know where you have that other spreadsheet stored may be a different mapping than what I have. So as soon as you send it to me, that link is broken.
Right,
they do that. There's a lot of things that people do. So I think there's a place both for the way you did it, a more centralized, share Excel services. There's also a place for using the files. If I'm traveling and I may have spotty connection, I need that file with me.
Not if you're using HTML5 and you have offline mode.
They'll say I'm on the plane. And I have no.
It's offline though. It's already been cached to your. It's cached to your laptop already, and so you're on the plane doing it. And when you come back, it syncs and is able to handle the versioning, your version versus the version that was on the server when, well, yeah, when you're done.
Well, I mean, if you check it, especially, and if you're using SharePoint, you check it out. It's locked out to you anyway.
Yeah, unfortunately, we don't have SharePoint right now.
Right. Well,
you're not missing a lot.
Mike,
well, that's your first point.
My point isn't in tools, it's in how we use the tools.
Yeah.
And that we've got to get better about, whether it's Google or Microsoft or whoever, right? Oracle, it doesn't matter. We've got a suite of tools that are coming that allow for better collaboration than using a 20-year-old, you know, piece of technology called a file structure.
Yeah. Now, you know, I've tried to use Google Docs when it first came out and say, hey, is that an alternative?
For the
power user who's using Excel, which is a lot of people in my group.
Sure.
You know, it's not doable. And then also, if you're going to be sharing with outside.
Uh-oh. The sky gods.
I don't like what he said. I just cut him off. Can I mute him?
Yeah. You pulled a Bill O'Reilly on him.
That's awesome.
Cut his mic.
Let's see if he comes back. Here, hold on. That's odd. There.
Some people on the call need to get Skype 5 or higher to use group video, just told me.
Well, but Mike has that for sure. Mike, can you hear us?